is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
The Moscow attack. I welcome remarks by Mary Kissel, the executive vice president of Stevens Incorporated, former senior advisor to the Secretary of State. Before that, many years in Hong Kong for the Wall Street Journal editorial page. The New York Times coverage. Three of the suspects told the court in Moscow they were from Tajikistan. And in interrogation videos reviewed by the Times, at least two men spoke Tajik. U.S. officials, goes the Times, said the attack had been conducted by the Islamic State, which claimed responsibility and released photos of what it said were the attackers and video of the attack itself. Mary, a very good day to you. The Tajikistan identity seems to be fixed at the alleged suspects who have been brutalized in their arrest and in the course of their flight from the scene of the crime. At the same time, the ISIS has been bold in making claims online that these attackers were at their direction. However, there is this other theme, as was introduced by President Putin, now reelected for the fifth time, that something is suggested Ukraine. I think the first step pass was they were headed towards Ukraine. They were also headed towards Belarus in the same car they arrived in. What is your measure of how this attack affects or doesn't affect the relations between Moscow and the rest of Europe and the United States, given that the war on terror doesn't care about Ukraine, it only cares about itself? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you, John. Well, this was a horrific attack. Lots of innocent people were killed, and there are many notable aspects of it. First and foremost, if this is indeed ISIS-K, they're generally launching attacks in places like Afghanistan and Iran. Moscow is quite a long ways away from that. So it shows a degree of sophistication and planning and also an expansion of their geographic reach. Secondly, it is a complete failure on the part of the Russian security services. Let's remember that Russia is a security state, and this is something that even American intelligence picked up and warned Moscow about, and the Russians didn't seem to catch it, nor did they heed the warnings that we provided to them. And thirdly, it shows that you don't need a lot of sophisticated weaponry to kill a lot of people and spread terror. This was basically guys standing up at a theater and mowing down theatergoers, which is horrific. And it leads me to the fourth and final point I wanted to make sure to address, which is that the war on terror never went away. It is something that if we don't keep a focus on it and we don't deter our enemies and we don't deny terror groups access to financing and training facilities, it will spread. And so it's not just the threat from ISIS-K to the likes of Russia and Iran, our enemies, but ISIS wants to attack us here at home in the United States, too. They want to attack Western Europe. So this is something that you just need to add to the litany of chaos in the world that this administration has allowed to fester thanks to its careful stance, too careful, and the erosion of U.S. deterrence.
Tajikistan. There are many doors to open. I want to open that door because Tajikistan is Central Asia. Once upon a time, it was part of the Soviet Empire. The Russian Federation maintains military bases, perhaps two in Tajikistan, said to be on patrol from infiltration from Afghanistan directly to the south. There's reason to believe that ISIS-K, though at odds with the Taliban and with Al-Qaeda, Al-Qaeda has training camps in Afghanistan, has been used in the past by Taliban, by Al-Qaeda, by Haqqani Network, for suicide missions and that kind of thing. I mention that because I'm not in any way pointing fingers. I'm suggesting that Central Asia could be the author of this attack, and that means Afghanistan is at the center of the question mark, underlining one more time the error of planning by the Biden administration 2 years ago to in some way abandon Central Asia without having completed its mission, which is to stop the ability for transnational attacks by Al-Qaeda and now its subset of ISIS-K. Is that something, Mary, that is a prominent conversation to your measure in commercial circles? Are people recognizing that by leaving Afghanistan, we've left ourselves exposed to threats such as we see in Moscow?
I think there are two different issues here. The first is the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan physically, which allows the Taliban and other terror groups the room to recreate training camps, to establish themselves in safe havens in ways that they just couldn't when the U.S. and NATO forces were there. The second issue concerns intelligence gathering, and I think it is notable that the United States did have the capacity to warn Russia about the Moscow attack while not being in Afghanistan. So there's clearly something that our intelligence community is doing that allows us the capability to maintain that, whatever it might be, SIGINT or HUMINT or whatever else we have, to maintain that intelligence gathering capability. And that's important because we are going through some sort of rationing or redistribution of personnel. And I think if you saw, for instance, a second Trump term, there would be questions about, you know, where do we put U.S. forces? Where do they really need to be in harm's way? Did we need them in Afghanistan? Do we really need them in eastern Syria, in outposts where they can't adequately defend themselves? And those are important questions to ask because, again, thanks to the Biden administration's weakness, we now face, as I said earlier, this litany of threats, not just from nation states, but from terror groups like ISIS-K and Al-Qaeda and others.
The Tajikistan story is going to spill itself out, so I wait on that fog of war. But back to Moscow and the remarks by Mr. Putin to bring Ukraine into this story. What is your opinion of why he did that? How does that help him? He's reelected. He's not campaigning anymore. What is his obsession with Ukraine as the source of all wickedness?
Well, Vladimir Putin has considered Ukraine a part of Russia for decades. Remember, he grew up in the Stalinist era. He was trained as a KGB agent. He uses every opportunity that he can to twist events to suit his narrative. And so it's perfectly predictable that a terror attack that is, very clearly, I think, Islamic terrorism, that he would somehow figure Kyiv as another excuse to continue his destructive war against civilians in Ukraine.
To the United Nations Council, two headlines, ABC News, White House disappointed, quote, Israel canceled trip to U.S. after U.N. ceasefire vote. And CNN, Israel cancels Washington visit after U.S. allows U.N. Gaza ceasefire resolution to pass. A few details. Tensions between the U.S. and Israel were exposed when Washington stood aside and allowed the U.N. Security Council to pass a resolution calling for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. This is more of the story we've had over these last weeks of a break in relations, friendly relations between the White House and Jerusalem. It is a puzzle to many of us where the Biden administration is going with this, to please allies, to please adversaries. Some say very straightforwardly, cynically, this is electioneering. How do you see it, Mary?
Well, it could be a combination of all of it, John. It's hard to see inside their heads. I think what we can do is examine what they've done. The president went to Israel and delivered very strong support for the Israeli government and the Israeli people in the wake of those horrible attacks last year. And ever since then, he's been slowly walking back that position, even going so far as to have allies in Congress, Chuck Schumer, call for the removal of a democratically elected Israeli prime minister in his last days. And now at the United Nations, to stand idly by as what can only be termed evil actors pass a resolution that doesn't make the ceasefire contingent on Hamas releasing its more than 130 hostages, which, by the way, include American hostages. So it's a remarkable shift in Democratic Party politics towards really our best ally in the Middle East and the only functioning democracy really in the Middle East. It's a slap in the face to the families of the hostages, including the American hostages. And I think it's a very cynical domestic play. Now, why would they do this? It could be that there are members of the administration that don't believe that somehow the terror group Hamas is really at fault here and there's something else going on. I think that's crazy, but they could believe that. They could also be playing domestic politics because of states like Michigan, where there are large Palestinian voting blocs that are very upset at the United States' support for Israel. Michigan is a swing state that is in play for the president in the upcoming November elections. So it could be a combination of lots of things. But at the end of the day, you have to step back from it and ask, as many of our clients ask, what does this mean for peace and stability in this key part of the world? And the unfortunate answer is, if you give wins to terror groups publicly in venues like the United Nations, even if it's just rhetoric, even if it doesn't mean anything, it sends a signal not just to the Hamases of the world, but to actors like China and Russia and Iran and North Korea that we are weak. And that is a very dangerous signal to send at a time when we are cutting our military capabilities, when our adversaries like China are building things like ships and hypersonic missiles and nuclear weapons at a much faster pace than we are. It's a terrible signal to send. And I fear that it will have ramifications far beyond Israel.
Mary Kissel is the executive vice president of Stevens Incorporated, former senior advisor to the Secretary of State, many years in Hong Kong. And we're going to Hong Kong now to talk of it, because there's been a blow to liberty in Hong Kong that may not be reversible. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.